Welcome to the Phoenix Cast, a podcast about cybersecurity, technology, and innovation issues in the military. We are your hosts, John,
Rich,
and Kyle.
Rich and I are both U.S. Marines, and the opinions expressed on the cast are our own, not official military policy.
And the opinions expressed by myself are my own, not those of my employer or any other businesses I happen to be associated with.
For today's episode, we have a special guest, Mass Sergeant Tim Gastingway. Tim, can you give us a quick intro, please?
Hi, everyone. Great to finally speak with you all. I'm Mass Sergeant Tim Gastingway, the 17XX, or Cyber Enlisted Assignments Monitor, soon to be Information Monitor. I've had the honor to serve in the Marine Corps for 17 years, first as a Data Systems Marine, then a Special Operations Capability Specialist, an IA Cybersecurity Marine, and now as a Cyber Marine. So thanks so much for having me on the podcast.
And thanks so much for coming on. And for a quick scene setter for people outside of the Marine Corps or maybe outside of the military, all of our, what you would consider HR type of decisions are made by a command outside of our operational command. So MARFOR Cyber, for instance, does not manage all of the personnel. And Tim will go into kind of like who does that and what his place in the organization is. So first question for you, Tim. As the senior enlisted Marine in charge of assignments in the cyberspace field, what's your formal title and what do you actually do as part of that title? And then as a kind of like follow on, who should and should not contact you and what should that look like?
So John, you're just giving him 16 questions at once?
Yeah, I mean, I thought 17 might be too many.
Okay, gotcha. Go on.
All right. Let's try to unpack this. As the senior enlisted Marine in charge of it, the title is actually Enlisted Assignments Monitor, or the front part of that is Primary MOS XXX Enlisted Assignments Monitor. The duties in a generalized statement is to ensure that the billets that the Marine Corps has paid to have talent in are filled by those talented Marines. That comes from a staffing goal, which is just the marriage of what the Marine Corps says they should have as a total organization and the money that they have to support it. And that fleshes itself out throughout the whole, they call it the gonculator, to become staffing goals for your specific primary MOS.
Tim, I can't let you just walk right past that word. First off, can you say it slightly slower for the kids at home and also explain why that name exists?
And if I can just tag on there, because I was going to jump in for this one too, please also give me staffing goal versus TO. You know, what does TO stand for? And is staffing goal and TO the same?
Perfect. So gonculator is just, let's say it's slower, gonculator. That is just the affectionate nickname for the entirety of the manpower decision-making system all the way down. So TO stands for, TO and E stands for Tables of Organization and Equipment, for those who aren't familiar. And that is what the Marine Corps has said and all these units have said, this is what I need to be fully mission capable. They've said that to the Marine Corps. Now the Marine Corps has that. Then you have various entities such as your, the Combat Development Integration, and Total Force Structure Division underneath them, as well as your assistant commandants and all their, occupation field sponsors and specialists for each MOS. And they come together and decide on what's called the ASR Adjusted Staffing Report. That is done twice a year. February, it's released in February and also in August, rarely on time. However, it is once that's done, then it goes through Manpower Management Information Branch. It also involves, I should never leave them out, the manpower plans and policy analysts, and their branch is a huge part of that decision and where the money goes and the analysis on what lands where. Once that goes there, it goes through the information branch, who then put it through the officer and the enlisted staffing goal models. That then fleshes out into, we have this TO&E and this money for talent. Then once it goes through there, staffing goals are created, which is why some people are like, well, I have my TO and I don't have my TO. What's going on with that? It's because you didn't catch a staffing goal at that specific location.
Yeah. And to make it even more simple. So TO, table of organization, the people I should have. So if your unit should be 40 people, it says on a piece of paper, the TO&E that Tim mentioned, hey, you should have 40 people and the E part equipment, this much gear with those 40 people. And then you subtract reality through the entire process that he went through. And that gives you what you're actually going to get. So if you show up to a meeting and you're like, my TO is blank, that is not what you should be saying. And Tim did an awesome job of running us through how we actually get the delta between those two things. So you handle all of the people and the assignments to make sure that talent goes where it is supposed to go. So if someone feels either rightly or wrongly, they got too much talent or not enough talent or not the right talent, who should contact you and at kind of what place in this process?
So for the who should contact your enlisted assignments monitor, the Colonel McClam, the head of manpower management enlisted assignments, had made it abundantly clear to all of us, and we are all in lockstep, that every Marine has the right to contact their monitor. The consideration, we asked for understanding because there are monitors on the floor who have 10,000 plus Marines that are under their charge. And that volume in and of itself just can't be sustained. Additionally, and with 10,000 plus Marines, you're going to have multiple MOSs. Some monitors are responsible for up to 6 primary MOSs. And when they have been working maybe one of those MOSs, and once they're in the chair, they need to know enough details to make the right and most intelligent assignment possible. It's definitely challenging, to say the least, but there's no one on that floor that is not just pushing constantly to get that done. So when a Marine is going to contact the monitor, your best window is no earlier than 10 months prior to the next assignment, which for the most part is once you're on station for 36 months, that's when the first data point for you to become eligible to PCS is. It doesn't necessarily mean you're going to. The 1300.8 Marine Corps Order 1300.8 outlines all this. It's a very short 80-page read.
I'm sorry,
but Control F is possible.
So, Tim, let me ask a follow-up question there, as the guy no longer in, so I can ask these questions fairly. In general, it was always sort of thought of, at least my perspective, that I was always bothering the monitor anytime I went to them. And there was this sort of unwritten rule that if you want to talk to the monitor, you should get your first sergeant involved to go like talk to the monitor on your behalf or something like that. Do you actually like recommend that? I mean, if you've got 10,000 Marines underneath one human brain, that's just never going to scale. So any life pro tips for anybody out there that needs to ask an actual question to their monitor, and like, it's maybe not time sensitive, but they just need to get, you know, 35 seconds of mind share. Like what's the pro tip for anybody out there who actually does need something from their monitor?
So I try to make myself available as much as possible. I have a very small kind of community of Marines at this point. We're still a niche MOS. But for a Marine that is dealing with a monitor who is just short on time, and you can probably tell it in their voice. I also remember contacting my monitor, just to be clear. I remember contacting my monitor and them just not having the time. They were never happy to hear from me, for sure.
Yeah, at that point, I just imagine as a human, every monitor is just a giant context-switching, interrupt-driven ball of rage. at the end of the day. and I mean, I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean I have 10,000 people that need something from me every single day, or every 36 months, even. That still equates to just dozens and dozens and dozens of people every single day. I mean, so read The Order. It's like you said, the short 80 page read. That's a good investment in understanding your future of how manpower works in the Marine Corps. And then try to be as efficient as possible with your email or your phone call, I guess, is maybe what I'm pulling out of that.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I would say is, you know, kind of do a little bit of homework before calling. A lot of the answers are out there. You can Google Dork it. You can even do some limited kind of advanced querying inside of MAR admins and all MAR searches. You can do those things to really narrow it down. As long as you know kind of what you're looking for, you can usually get to it. NavMax, MAR admins, publications. Another thing is, you don't have to get your senior leadership involved. There's nothing saying that you have to get your senior leadership involved in order to contact the monitor. However, your senior leadership should, or at least you should be able to find at least one or two trustworthy individuals. If not, I mean, that's a real problem and that should be looked at. However, you should at least have some trustworthy individuals and kind of run it by them. See what their experience is. And if they start saying, well, I believe, or I feel like it's this way, you ask for maybe some direction to something that's concrete.
Right.
Because as we all know, Rument is not a legitimate source of intelligence. So you have to.
That would be acronym check. That would be rumor intelligence.
Indeed. Indeed. But boy, did that sound good to say, didn't it?
I might repeat it quite a bit.
Understood.
On a daily basis.
So let me ask you to follow up that then. I mean, Rumit being, I think, the thing that is the most influential on enlisted Marines wanting to talk to their monitor. I heard you can get assigned to XYZ, or I heard there's a post over in Antarctica that you can go to that you don't have to do anything all day. What do you wish everybody knew, I guess, about how to make their assignment dreams come true? Or is there an FAQ that you post on the Manpower website in some way, shape, or form? Like, do you have a published list of top 100 dumb questions that we get asked every single day that have easy answers from a pub or anything like that? Just, you know, you've got a platform here to talk to a lot of folks. What do you wish they knew?
As far as making all your assignment dreams come true, that's sometimes a moonshot. Again, it all comes down to that staffing goal. And Marines talk. We all know this, and service members in general, they're all going to talk, "Ooh, I had this experience. I had that experience." So I try to approach everything like when I'm talking to someone, if they're not coming at it kind of selfishly and hostile, then I'm going to reciprocate as far as just let's have a conversation about what you want. And I will run them down what I have available by geolocation. And we assign by monitored command code. So we don't assign to a billet, and we don't assign to just a like MEF level. We go down to that monitored command code, which is, I think, down in the regimental or battalion, down to the battalion level. So when we look at the staffing goal there and say, hey, your grade is rated here. The Marine Corps has paid for you for a talented individual here. At that point, I love to take volunteers, but I also need to scrub it past all the information that's out there. We do have access to a lot of information in this seat for all of our Marines. It's not always easy to get it all pulled up in time where we deal with, you know, some antiquated equipment issues and things of that nature, a lot of different silos for information, but we're looking at all the Marines' information as far as past assignments, your retention data, looking to see if you have anything for separations, inter-service transfers, looking to have any of that. So we're pulling that up while we're talking to you and kind of ensuring that we're doing a fact check on what you're telling us, because the unfortunate nature of the thing is sometimes Marines are not gonna be completely forthcoming because they feel defensive about it, which is fair given you know, my experience with previous monitors. Or, you know, maybe they just don't, there's a trust issue. I don't know what the issue is, but, you know, try not to take it as a lack of respect when that happens, but it's difficult. The big thing to understand, I guess, for a dream assignment is no one's trying to quote unquote screw you over or quote unquote out to get you. Everyone up here is a consummate professional and always doing the best they can with what they have.
All right, Tim. So I'm going to do a massive TLDR on that because I feel that was a bunch of information there. So step one is Tim and all the other monitors cannot be bribed by whiskey or any other baked goods, but they can be bribed with respect, professionalism, patience, and an understanding of reality. Would you say that's the best way to get the best service?
I guess in summary, you know, if we're both professionals about the thing, a professional thing can happen.
I love that. That's awesome. Advanced hot take notice right there. There it is.
That's bumper sticker worthy.
Exactly.
Yeah. So Tim, it's Rich. I'd like to jump in here too to kind of take us to the next, next question. And before I do, I just want to say this much. On a previous podcast, we talked about, you know, the size of headquarters Marine Corps in general, and how not huge it is compared to the rest of the Marine Corps. And then two, just the size of the Marine Corps compared to the other service components, which is also not huge. So I just want to say, like, your earlier comments about like one monitor having to manage 10,000 Marines, like, I really think that is due one more mention. So I just mentioned it, right? Like, that's a significant.
Or let's put a point on that. If your issues take 30 minutes to explain, that won't scale 10,000 times. So figure out a way to get your most salient points in there.
So just to be clear, as we start talking about having 10,000 Marines under one monitor, let's do some quick math here. 10,000 Marines, there's about 260 working days per calendar year, depending on the year. Let's take 30 days of leave out of there because we all earn that and we want to take it. Now you're down to 230. Now take out the rifle range and your annual training requirements, 96s, et cetera. Let's just take another 20 working days. That's 4 weeks. That sounds fair. Now you're down to 210. If we do the math on that, that's 47 Marines per day for that monitor that has 10,000 Marines under it. That's six Marines, individual human being Marines, each working hour or one every 10 minutes per year until the end of time. So let that sink in, where you want to be not only very informed, so i.e. read the MAR admins, read the orders, read all those things, but you want to be efficient and polite.
Yeah, so what I love about this is, like, John immediately went to scale because he loves cloud, right? And then Kyle immediately went to math because he also loves cloud and loves math. And I'll follow up with this before I get to my questions, since you went on a quick rant. It's all about data, right? So I know people know that I like to talk about data on this cast, but to your point, Tim, like, I think what's super, I guess, optimistic coming from the commandant and in the command element of the Marine Corps, of headquarters Marine Corps, is that they are looking at trying to automate and reduce information silos so you all, as the human resources professionals, can get to that information faster, right? Instead of sifting through PDFs and looking through people's military professional files and things of that nature. So I just wanted to mention that for the audience, that I think that's pretty significant, right? And we're the smallest service, right? So we could definitely leverage automated solutions when it comes to data and analysis. But that said, I did want to just talk about something that was super current and really excited that you came on the cast right after this happened. So on March 8th of this year, a MAR admin was published that we wanted to just kind of pick your brain about a little bit, right? So in the simplest way, you know, maybe it's not going to be a tweet or less, but something like that. Could you help us define for the audience the 1700 military occupational field that is now being called information maneuver? And then talk about this MAR admin, which we'll have a link to in the show notes, but MAR admin 102/22, which is establishment of the information maneuver occupational field, or the 1700 OC field as we've been talking about, and why that's significant to the Marine Corps. So a lot to unpack there too, but if you could just start, like, you know, how do you define that occupational field from your perspective over at Manpower.
So when this came out, and thanks for those questions, those are great questions. When this came out, it wasn't a surprise to me because myself and our Ockfield specialist talk on a daily basis, because it's my belief and his as well that if we're not rowing in the same direction, then things can get even more out of whack than they need to be. So with this MAR admin, that's kind of what I see it as in general, is that we're trying to take what seems to be disparate efforts across the Marine Corps and put them together, since they all fall under the Deputy Commandant for Information, and let's get them to row together and make ourselves a maneuver element in two warfare domains, basically.
I'll say something. I know John probably wants to jump in here too, but I really think that's profound in a way, and maybe not everybody in our audience or, you know, listeners kind of understand, right? So the Marine Corps prides itself on being a maneuver warfighting organization, right? So to apply that to the set of MOSs that by themselves can be looked at as niche things, but together, to use your phrase, Tim, rowing in the same direction, could be immensely more powerful, right? In more than one domain. Like, I know multi-domain warfare is like the buzzword, right, that everybody uses if you're a professional in the DoD. So, you know, taking the, you know, the information domain is a warfighting arena, right, for lack of a better phrase, and then trying to get all the MOSs to interact with each other, one is a non-trivial task, right? Not just from a Manpower perspective, but I think just to talk from the operational perspective, I've been part of these organizations now for a while, and even inside of one of these families that have now become part of this information maneuver occupational field, that was not simple, right? I think John and I talked about our previous time as like communications professionals and trying to get the people that did packet switching, or what people know as data now, right, to talk with the people that did circuit switching, which was telephony and stuff like that. Like, that in and of itself, when VoIP came out, which I'm dating myself, right, where
act of God,
voice over IP or everything going over IP, like that was like a profound change that the Marine Corps had to kind of wrestle with. So now you take these like non-kinetic technical MOSs and these like influence kind of psychological MOSs, and you slam them together, tech and non-tech. It's a non-trivial thing. So I just kind of like applaud you at your level, and then, you know, the Ockfield specialists and sponsors working with each other here, because this is not easy, and it's going to take a lot of hard work. And John, you want to say something, so go ahead, brother.
Before we applaud him, I have a question. Are you actually in charge of those additional MOSs, or are we doing like a phase in where in 2 or 3 years you will be, or is it like time now, it's you?
So that's been discussed, and the decision point was made that when the MAR admin comes out, and it did, the 0521 transition MAR admin came out in October, the 0521s will be cutting over to become 1751s and the 1795s that you see on there. So as far as there being one operations in the information environment chief, there at least is still that distinction between the psychological portion and the cyber portion with the establishment of the Ockfield.
Oh man, that is actually great to hear, I think, from, you know, the inception of bringing the Ockfield together, because I can't imagine, right? Like, we already know, I say we, John and I, already know how hard it is to just lead the technical side of that, right, and try to fuse it with the non-tech side. And that, I just go back to what I said before, like this is not trivial stuff, but I also believe it's like extremely important and kind of where all the warfighting elements across the joint force need to go. Like, if we get good at this, man, we're going to be a force to be reckoned with, I think, out there from a multi-domain perspective. Yeah, John, I don't know if you have any other thoughts on that.
No, I think we can officially applaud him now, though. So now that we've got official applause behind there, I do have a kind of like a follow-on question that's somewhat in the realm there. So we just took, as Rich said, we've got technical and non-technical including together, and there can be a massive amount of power putting that all together. Nuts and bolts, you know, dollars and personnel. Are you able to speak to if the 17 family of MOSs is expected to expand or contract? Because I could see a world in which you're saying, hey, we put a bunch of stuff together, kind of your mid-level management and some of that stuff, we can be more efficient by jamming them all together. And I could see a world where you'd want to draw that down. But I could also see, hey, we're putting a bunch of unique parts. We need to figure out a way to not lose what made those unique parts powerful and have some like synergy officers, if you will. I'm sure there's some colonels who are going to hate that I use that word. Do you know if we're going to expand or contract? And do you know if there's any logic there, or is that a wait and we'll see?
So the numbers and projections that I have for expansion in the cyber MOS over the coming years is expanding all the way up through FY26 and most likely beyond. The important thing to kind of define here is a sessions versus a lateral move. We became in a sessions MOS fairly recently. A sessions means that you are starting from being a poolee to a recruit to your combat training, then to MOS school and everything that entails. So you are from yellow footprints all the way up. That is an accessions Marine. A lateral move Marine is someone who is in their Marine Corps career already and then moving in to the MOS. We've over the past few years, we've taken in a lot of lateral move Marines because there are a lot of highly capable Marines that are interested in this occupational field. And there's no reason not to give them a shot at becoming that next rock star in the field. So long answer short, yes, we are absolutely expanding the cyber field. As far as the rest of the information occupational field, I can't really speak to that at this time.
Yeah, Tim, I wanted to just kind of maybe I ask a question and kind of start just a little sidebar conversation. So, you know, I know you when you guys talk about expansion and contraction, right? Almost the elasticity, right? To use a geek phrase, right? of the 1700 occupational field. I know we talk about it from a, you know, how do we lat move people in and then how to access people up from like ground zero in their Marine Corps career. But I know that there are like a lot of folks that are talking about expansion of the occupational field from a additional, call it MOS or, you know, additional skill sets that they're looking to add into the field. All right. So I bring that up just to say this month's, you know, Marine Corps Gazette, there was an article titled Cyber Advisors Leveraging Cyber Talent from Across the Corps by Chief Warrant Officer 5 Jabinal, James Jabinal. I know Jabs, he's an awesome dude and just a phenomenal Marine. But having said that, like things like that, where they're talking about adding other MOSs into the mix of already new MOSs that people are lat moving in or accessing up through, like that type of stuff. And I'll pause for 1 second here to say, like, we were talking about this in a previous cast that we had on, you know, development, right? Software development. I know there's kind of a push potentially to get, you know, software developers assigned inside of the 1700 occupational field. So from like both those perspectives, like expanding the MOS, I think is not just, you know, people moving in from a lat move perspective or people moving up from an accessions, but any thoughts? And I know you're really like far right of bang on this, right? Because all this stuff has to go through TFSD. It's got to go through like all, to your phrase, the gonculator on the front end while that front end analysis happens. You know, do you have any thoughts on that? And fine if you don't, it's super topical because I'm seeing these things come out in like the Gazette and the conversations happening. And I think some folks just get confused at times, like what we mean by expansion of the MOS. Like we just kind of defined it from two perspectives. So any thoughts on like new MOSs, like expanding the MOS with new MOSs inside of it?
Great questions. And I appreciate the chance to clarify here. So expansion that I was talking about was kind of purely numbers based. However, we do have four additional MOSs right now, or really NMOSs, necessary MOSs, but they are billeted currently. So we have the 1712, which is your kind of on the offensive side, and 1713 as well. Then you have your 1722s and your 1723s, which are your host and your network masters. So those are already in the mix and there to identify a position where someone really talented and qualified there can be placed. However, that's not really fleshed out yet. And as U.S. Cyber Command and MAR-4 Cyber's definitions and the service as well, as their training pipelines and roadmaps become more solidified, because we are still a new Ockfield. Once these become more solidified, then you're going to be looking at kind of what you're talking about, is expanding those billets to different places. Again, some of those billets inherently need more authorities and more access and more of everything, and takes a lot of specialized and expensive training. And some of them, you know, you can be that cyber advisor if you're well studied. Again, with the current levels that we have of people in the cyber field, you're not going to catch the staffing goals that we talked about earlier if it's a kind of a one-off position with a lower manning precedence than others. For instance, if it's a MAR-4 Cyber MCC with a higher manning precedence that rates a certain percentage of their staffing goal to be filled, that's getting filled first. And that's kind of, we got to keep that straight in our head. And it's also on the adjusted staffing report, the ASR.
Hey, thanks, Tim. I really appreciate it. I mean, we're throwing some wacky questions at you today. And I just think that these are questions that people, you know, in the audience have. So I just really appreciate taking time to answer them. So moving on to the next topic then, Tim. So I just wanted to talk about the officer side of the house, right? Like, I know that you, you know, you're in charge of the enlisted assignments, right, for this occupational field. But, like, do you guys interact, like, daily with, like, the officer assignment team about, like, where we're sending folks, like, what their backgrounds look like? Is there any pairing of, like, an enlisted and officer there? Or just how does that interaction work in general?
Great question. We do have some interaction with the volume of kind of phone calls and what they call a data management that we have to do, which is Tim's phrase for that is data management is just the definition of something a computer should be doing for you, but I'm doing it manually. So
that's awesome.
With the volume of that we're doing, there's not a whole lot of time for interactions. I do go over and I'm usually interacting with the company grade officer assignments monitor that's in charge of the 17s. With the warrant officer selectees, as soon as you catch a select grade in the system of W1, you disappear from my system completely. You are gone. I can't touch you. I can't see you. You're completely gone. You are over to the company grade monitor. I'll get questions with their medical deferments. There are people who end up dropping from the warrant officer program. And with the time that takes, and really there's been some confusion on what's the direction to get that W1 select grade out of the system if someone's not going to pursue the program, or if they're medically deferred. It's difficult to kind of get them a place to land, because I can't touch them and put them on enlisted staffing goals, and the company grade can't see the enlisted staffing goals. So I basically have to kind of guide them in, like, blindly, hey, this is where I have a place to put this deferment until the next go round.
So follow-up question there. So you said some of the officer enlisted pairing was a little bit manual. So, like, for instance, like, you put a star next to Lieutenant Colonel Vaccarello and says star denotes needs adult supervision, like that?
Absolutely.
Well, I haven't really seen any of that. There actually are some stars in our system, but they delineate, you know, separations, stabilizations for deployment, service spouses, kind of the big blaring issues. Information branch will kind of make a decision on, you know, who's who or what's the right thing to put in there. And then at that point, it's just a big visual reminder, hey, this person is doing this or this person has this. We still have to do a little bit of digging. There's no hovering over it, that's for sure, and getting a good drop down of information. But that's the visual cue of, hey, this Marine has a little more going on than just being that Marine.
That makes sense. So I'm going to shift you a little bit more towards retention now. So inside of the cyber MOS 17, are you and this is going to be a multi-part question. Are you noticing any retention issues that are unique to the 17 field, or are they, you know, you go to the mass sergeant in the cubicle next to you who's doing a different MOS population and it's kind of like all the same things. So the first part is, are the retention issues unique or pretty much the same what we're seeing across the Marine Corps? And then do you believe any of the guidance that you've gotten on TM 2030, Talent Management 2030 is going to make a difference in that policy, or is that a, we need to kind of wait and see?
Oh, this is great, because there's always retention is a big one for everyone in manpower management. The Colonel McClam goes out with monitors who are having retention issues and will do retention assistance visits local to these areas and have town halls with the Marines and these fiscal year cohorts and kind of, you know, trying to get them to see that we're not just some uncaring entity that doesn't, you know, isn't concerned with keeping the right Marine in the right spot or making something happen for a Marine. One of the examples he used was, he was at a town hall and a admin Marine stood up and said, "Sir," I was an NCO, "Sir, I want to be an infantry Marine." And he said, "Go see so-and-so and make it happen." And that's the end of it. So kind of making these things happen, showing, he calls them unnatural acts, but if that's what it takes to retain the talent, per Talent Management 2030, and he was kind of doing this before it was published as well. So, he's always been leaning ahead on it, and we try to lean ahead on it. Cyber retention issues, as of right now, we don't have a significant one, but there could be some coming down the road just due to what we had to do to establish the MOS. Talking about senior NCOs and staff NCOs getting into training pipelines where now they're just coming out of them and they're either going to promote out or, and unfortunately the promote out thing, especially at the top two enlisted pay grades, it's really difficult to swing because there's only so many of those positions. And if you want to stay technical on your team and you have a specific skill set, there might not be that that wiggle room or that position that you want. There's not actually really a lot of objective data for me to go off of other than just manually counting out my retention numbers and talking to the retention folks about what we have. As to why cyber Marines exit the service or any Marine exits the service, there's the commanding officers conduct these exit interviews, but that stays local to the command. And I've tried to track it down once I figured out why, or that it wasn't stored at headquarters Marine Corps. And there wasn't any real way to get a hold of that. But I think in Tim's opinion, that is a great data set to start like a natural language processing project where you can go ahead and start looking at what Marines are saying across the force. But also there's the kind of the underpinning there that the Marines aren't always going to tell the commanding officer exactly what they think, but it's at least a big blue arrow in the right direction.
Yeah, Rich is like, it's all about the data. Leg is like shaking mercilessly. His whole screen is shaking.
I also want to double click on what Tim just said, that the Marines may not actually be honest with their CO. Right? As much as I don't mean that there is, you know, maliciousness there. I just mean, boy, it would be nice to have a third party who doesn't have a stake in when their terminal leave can begin that they are able to give brutally honest feedback to. Do you know what I mean?
Who doesn't, for instance, write their fit rep?
Correct.
Or, exactly. Or sign their final award document or all of those things.
Exactly.
Okay. Interesting postulation there, Kyle.
So, Tim, I want to also go into a couple bits of this because I seem to be the one that always talks about retention from the other side, since I'm the one who has failed to be retained, maybe, in this three-person host team. But I was a chief in my MOS when I was still active duty and enlisted as well. And I know, especially as you climb the ranks, right, the more you get promoted, you're really expected to absorb or self-learn or just effing figure it out kind of thing with all of the other technical MOSs that start to roll up within your MOS family. So as a professional in charge of assignments and all of these bits and pieces, is there a goal to assign people to their specific niches now that we've made this transition to the 1700 OCC field? And what I mean by that is, you know, are you planning to take an OCO person and make them more OCO specialized, you know, DECO to DECO, MISO to MISO, PSYOP, PSYOP? Or how does that work when you become the 1799? Are you expected to just be the master of all information maneuver in some way, shape, or form? Or just how can we solve that problem of how do you take someone who's been OCO their whole life and broaden their horizon?
Really, really great questions. That's a really challenging problem just in the cyber field for myself, is placing the right people at the right place at the right time. Because again, there's only so many open billets for these, you know, master sergeants and master gunnery sergeants. And most of them are just going to do, serve their country for 20 to 24 years. And now it's time to kind of get out into industry or to government service and find their way there. The other thing that happens is, for instance, if a Marine, once the kind of all the boards are let out for the selection boards for your master sergeants and master gunnery sergeants, you have to decide where to put them because it's a one of one. There's no overfill, underfill there. It is one of one. So if you have someone who has been sitting in some billet for many years, but there's no spot for them there, it's kind of stopping the bleeding. Hey, where can we put this Marine where they're going to actually be value added? And then sometimes that doesn't align with that Marine's goals. And if they are at a certain point in service, they say, okay, it's time for me to end my retire from the service honorably, and they decide to exit. If they do that after all the orders are cut and everything, someone else has to take that spot. Then you're gapping a spot. So for every decision that I make from any level, but especially the senior enlisted levels, it is a waterfall of orders of effects going all the way down the line for each individual making a decision for themselves. So that's the balance that I have to strike when I'm going over the data of who to put where in these. If someone has been, let's say, OCO for their whole career, if they don't want to take a billet other than an OCO team and there's no OCO roles available, it's either, you know, maybe a staff role nearby at like a Joint Forces headquarters or something that they can still provide that value there. Or at the end of the day, they're a talented individual. They wouldn't have gotten to that level if they weren't somewhat of a talented individual. So being a flex player is still value added in my mind. So when you don't get what you want, sometimes you got to go do what's needed.
And when you're talking about planning up to 2026, I mean, that's 4 years out. There's an entire other rotation of junior enlisted Marines who will come in and leave by the time the current plans that you have out. So there's so many ripples in the pond for every person that moves around, right? Or changes their mind or decides not to take an assignment. There's so, like N equals N squared at that point of possibilities that you have to manage always.
Absolutely. It's really fun.
You're literally playing Tetris with like 10,000 blocks at any given moment, and any block can move at any point, and you have to rearrange the board.
Yeah, that I'd say that's accurate.
Yeah, and Kyle and Tim, like I just wanted to again, CAST is about technology and innovation, right? In the DoD, specifically in this episode about the Marine Corps and talent management, I feel like we can solve some of this with software. Not all of it, right? But like these data points, right? Like we talked about in a previous cast, like performance management, right? Like if I'm a reporting senior and I'm going to rate a Marine a certain way, I feel like the software should say, you've rated this person just like these people, right? Do you really want to do that? Question mark, right? And I feel like in our manpower systems, and again, never been in a role where I've had the responsibility to assign Marines in the Marine Corps or use those systems. But I feel like in general, software should be able to help a little bit with that. And I think the Commandant is pushing this, right, in, as part of, you know, TM 2030, like the software catching up to enable the people to make assignments. But like, you know, for example, like Tim, when you say like, hey, this Master Guns decides like, hey, I've done my, you know, bit for king and country, and I'm going to retire honorably from the Marine Corps, whenever that decision's made, might not be in line with your assignment process. But if that opens up a hole, the software should at least say, hey, I've looked and the people with these skills, right? Because we've marked those attributes in some way. Here's your pool of people you could select from to move that. So your thought process gets a little bit expedited, right? Instead of you doing all the math and the long division, there's a little bit of a pool of information saying, hey, Tim, this person retired. The person most like this person is located in this BIC, in this MCC, in this region of the globe. I think that would help out immensely. But sorry for the rant there. I just feel like, you know, this is where I feel like we could use software to help, you know, our assignments folks who arguably have the heaviest weight responsibility in the Marine Corps, putting the people to the mission set. So, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on there, guys, but like, I feel like sitting down with a software development team and saying, here's my use case, right? As a senior enlisted advisor and assignments officer, this is what I need from you, software devs, would be awesome.
Yeah, those are great thoughts, Rich. I really appreciate that. That's something that I'm quite passionate about. When I got into the assignment, going through the daily and doing the limited turnover, because in all honesty, there's no documentation or policy anywhere that says you rate a turnover. I get asked that question a lot. Hey, how long am I going to have to turn over? I'll see what I can do, but every single overfill, it's called an overfill, creates a gap somewhere else. So if I let one unit do a 2-month turnover, there is a unit that is gapped for 2 months on a Marine. So that's a problem that is way above kind of my pay grade to solve that calculus. And who knows if it's even solvable. But from an information management perspective, I have been in the Marine Corps long enough to see that there are huge challenges there. I've worked with a few different teams and contracts and just kind of lending my experience and advice to them on how to make data a little bit better visualized, but it's still siloed. Tim's opinion is always that you've got a platform your data and wash it and kind of engineer it correctly. And we're not getting there very quickly, in my opinion, because I'm still working in silos and I'm still doing things manually. For instance, with all the data that I have, and I kind of looked at the costs of my daily and the Marines daily, and I started looking at for assignments, what is something that, one, the Marine should do for themselves that I'm currently doing? And two, what should a computer or something algorithmically be doing that I am currently doing? And I sketched out kind of a system that My thought was a portal or some kind of app where the Marines are going in and interacting with it, and being able to sit with their families and look at what's available, because we know what's available at the moment. We do. And we should. And then the Marine can kind of look around these assignments, and there should be more in detailed detailed information about those assignments. Then the Marine maybe click on an assignment, and it should drop out of rotation for everyone else to see. It should drop out of rotation for a limited amount of time. Give the Marine, their family, you know, 10, 15 minutes. You're probably going to have to fill out some sort of form or workflow for it to go up for decision process. Then after that, you should have some sort of waiting period where if the something changes in the Marine's life, it often happens. And say, oh, I can't really do this assignment. I wanted it, but XYZ has happened. They should be able to put that assignment back in a rotation. These are things that are definitely within the realm of possible. I mean, we've seen it in industry for a very long time.
Yeah, every ticket booking website, every add to cart, this is only going to be around for a while. Low stock indicators, right? Like the retail community has absolutely solved this. And there are, you know, a dozen open source frameworks that you could just point, click, and deploy.
And I've talked to the MMEA2 unit head about this as well. And he had some great insight on that as well. He's like, start taking some feedback. Because I was like, we can take analytics and feedback from the Marines interacting with this. Because that's what all these websites are doing, is that we are interacting with them and they're taking that. If they're doing their op cycle right, they're taking that feedback and analyzing it and making these giant correlation data sets and selling them off or leveraging them to get you to consume more or spend more time with them. If we're really serious about retaining the right people, we need to analyze those people. Marines go to their phones. It's, you know, that is the digital extension of yourself. So if we're able to analyze that off an app on their phone, we can learn a lot. I'm not talking about like hoovering, not talking about Facebook level, like hoovering on all their stuff in the background, but whatever their interactions are, how long have they stayed on this page? How many times have they clicked around? What have they clicked on? What have they selected? And another thing is put some opportunities out there for these Marines tailored to who they are. We know what primary MOS they are. We have all this information in the Total Force system that says who this Marine is. So let's advertise. Hey, you know, would you like to be a drill instructor? Would you like to be a recruiter? Some Marines want that. Let them volunteer. Volunteerism is always preferred. Because a person who wants to be somewhere is going to work harder, longer, and be happier.
I love everything about that entire rant, and I'm just going to say that and shut up.
So, Tim, final question. Going to give you a chance to kind of flip the chessboard around here and ask us. So if you want to ask either Rich or I questions or Kyle a question, floor is yours.
One question that has always kind of been in the back of my mind, and I've asked it a few times, getting some different answers, is from the on the ground level, as far as command or mission commander kind of level, is there anything that you hear rumbling like that could become an issue that maybe you think we should get ahead on?
Sure. I'll start and then I'll let Rich kind of back clean up. I think the biggest thing I would address if I were you from what, you know, percolates around the building is that because the 17 MOS is a bit kind of unicorn unique, almost that it's like whimsically, there aren't any rules or it's difficult to pin down any sort of stability as far as rotations, and people kind of just toss some things out. So I think some myth busting or proactive comms along what these types of things actually mean would be super helpful. So for instance, if a Marine was working towards attaining a certain certification, if they got certification, is MMEA going to be willing to let them get a certain amount of payback after that certification, i.e. maybe twice the time they took to study for it, they get to stay on station? Or are we moving every single gunnery sergeant this FY? There's just a lot of kind of rumen stuff that goes around that I think maybe proactive communication would help stop some of that stuff and maybe allow for a little bit more predictability. And as I say that, I also know that there's always going to be kind of commander's discretion and moving tides, but maybe a little bit of proactive communication around those types of things from my standpoint would probably help.
Yeah, I think so. To echo what you said earlier multiple times, Tim, a great question. I think the thing that I hear the most daily is related to an earlier comment you made about a challenge that you have as the assignments professional, which is with folks that we have lat moved in to the occupational field, it takes them, you know, 18 to 24 months to go through a training pipeline, like John's mentioned, right? And then, you know, they finally get through that after they got the lat move approved and they finally get through the training. Then it's time for them to be eligible, to your point, 36 months to get looked at for a rotation, right? To somewhere else. Like, I'm going to move you from your current BIC to another one. And I think to John's point about like getting in front of, you know, the group with earlier comms, maybe at an OAG, I don't know if that's right, like an operational advisory group for the audience who doesn't know what that is, like a quarterly thing. We could at least start to figure out what the strategy is around that until our accession pipeline meets the lat move curve, right? So if we had a graph that had two curves on it, one was the accession curve, like I come in through boot camp from my recruiter all the way up through like the 1799, right? And the other one is I came laterally and then the curve started. I moved in from lat move. Where those two curves kind of meet each other, right? Just to give people a visual, I think that is the sweet spot. Right. And I think we should start talking about the strategy right now about that sweet spot, which is maybe the gunnies have to stay in the technical MOS, right? Or in a billet that's required of them to gain enough experience. But even though we want that billet to be an E5 or an E6 per the pure model of accession, I think we need to be talking about that sweet spot. What is the strategy? How long do we stay there? Do we let the technical people, now that we've invested all this time and money in them and they've successfully navigated that extremely difficult training, to stay on keyboard for a certain amount of time? And what does that mean to the rest of the Marine Corps, right? Like, do they stay in these, you know, in the MAR-4 that's designed for them to be on keyboard? Do we push them to the Fleet Marine Force after that time? Right. I do not. I mean, I think everybody in the MOS has their own personal opinion. But what I think would be amazing is if we came together as a group at like an OAG and defined that sweet spot, the accession curve meets the lat move curve. How long do people stay in that, you know, sweet spot? And it's probably a bad phrase, that like that band or range or bracket, until the accession curve has caught up to that. Right.
And since Rich went there, I'll be even more pointed on what would be super helpful. So I know from previous experience of give or take the last decade prior to the new MAR admin coming out about pictures, when you had a gunny who didn't want to become a mass sergeant because they wanted to keep their hands on keyboard, they just wouldn't take a picture. Then they could stay a gunny. They could keep their hands on keyboard, whatever. So specifically, you know, if I could take back and get one answer from you right now, it would be, How do we have the 2022 don't take a picture answer to this question, but obviously a little bit more eloquent, a little bit more TM 2030, not clearly circumventing rules. I think that's the one thing I would ask for.
Okay. That's a legitimate ask, but I would say I would respectfully decline to answer that one. Just because there'd be a myriad of consequences for myself, for Headquarters Marine Corps, for the MOS in general, to saying, don't do this and then this. I'll put it out there that if we are not a MOS of less intelligent people. Not that there's any MOS out there like that, but we have a GT score requirement. I bet you all can figure it out.
Yeah, I just, that was actually probably the exact right answer for this podcast, right? It's like, we need to think about this without making a quick decision. But I think I would just like internal to the service component and the AC field to like now in full transparency, right? COVID caused a lot of problems with us communicating with each other. Like, yes, we're remotely on a podcast. That can happen. All the cool things that happen with remote video and VTC, it's great, right? However, like, I don't think anything replaces getting a really talented group of people, which you've just mentioned, together and talking deliberately about the problems they have and trying to get to a data-driven outcome. So I'm with you. I think this takes, and I know the AC field manager and the AC field sponsors are trying real hard to put this together. It's just like, when do you do that, right? As we're coming out of the COVID state, so because people are moving around. But I really do think, you know, now I'm going to force myself to write this down because I have the graph in my head and try to explain that visual internal to the service component. But that's probably the right answer. We just need to get together and actually deliberately think through this. So, yeah.
Absolutely. I agree 100%. And just so you know, those ideas, we're tracking on them at the Ockfield level and at the assignments level. But there's no easy answer. And as Rich will be glad to hear this, but the data is not there to get the right median or mean times of these trainings to establish a program. There have been programs that they tried to put in place before, and I'm still dealing with the ramifications of that being managed the way it was. The right answer is not to just say, hey, you know, we need to retain these people. Let's extend time. Let's promise them certain MCCs. We need something to back that up before we go in on that. And that's going to take some time. For sure, we need to be interacting a lot more. We need to, everyone's in their hidey hole, in their silo, really getting after it. I'm never under the assumption that people are just being lazy. Everyone is getting after the mission set that they are put to, because that's what we do as Marines. But we sometimes got to pick our head up and come full circle and put these challenging ideas in front of each other and test them.
Tim, those were great questions. Thanks so much for asking us. So we got all kinds of juice on the, or all kinds of meat on the bone here. Juicy, juicy stuff. Kyle, hit us with your hot take.
I'm going to go back to the earlier part of the conversation, and I'm going to steal one of Tim's quotes that I may get a little bit wrong, but I'm going to hopefully hit the heart of it, which is, if you act professionally, we can do professional things. And for everyone out there, I interact with my monitor all the time when I was enlisted and even when I was a warrant officer. And the one thing I can tell you is you can get a whole lot more accomplished with a kind word and a gun than a kind word alone or a gun alone. And so just be sure that you are remembering these are like people with jobs and all sorts of stress on their shoulders too. And all they want is for you to be successful while making sure that their job is successful. So just empathy plus plus to everybody anytime you have to talk to your monitor. And your lack of, what's the quote here? Lack of prior proper planning does not equal emergency on mine. I'm mixing things up there, but basically, you know, have your stuff, don't be the last minute person. And also don't come in thinking that you are special sauce and that everyone else shouldn't matter. So that's really all I got. Is this has been a really good eye-opening experience, and I'm glad that we had this convo, and just thanks for being here, Tim.
Rich, hit us with that knife hand.
Yeah, so I really wish I could come across the screen with a knife hand or a double knife hand, but I think for today, this is just an extremely important and profound thing. And what I mean by that is how we assign and manage our people. There's really no knife hand that's going to come from Rich, because I don't have the answers on this, right? But I do think that there are a couple things worth repeating that we said in different ways on the cast, right? The first one, I'll throw a big bone out to the Deputy Commandant for Information himself, General Glavy, who says there's no interest like self-interest, which aligns to Tim's comment about why don't we advertise directly to Marines, right? They will tell us, let's analyze the people in the occupational field. They will tell us what they want, right? So there has to be this confluence of data tagging, right? And analysis in order to get to that state where we can advertise. So I think that's the first part of the knife hand, right? And then the second part is, this is not trivial. And to do it right is almost more not trivial. So what I mean by that in the second part of the knife hand is, if you get approached because you are a high performer in your MOS or just this occupational field, to go do something like Tim does, which is work at MMEA or work at MMOA, that is not time out of your MOS spent poorly. That is time spent probably really, really, really well in trying to help to move your occupational field forward. That's not really for everybody, right? And normally the people that get selected for that are the ones that don't want to go, right? But I haven't met somebody yet that didn't have a profound impact on the Marine Corps when they went up to one of those roles and then looked back and said, that was a waste of my entire career, right? So like, if you do get selected for that, please take it seriously. And on the second part, which I guess is the third part to this knife hand, which wasn't supposed to be a knife hand, is, you know, this is not for the people at headquarters Marine Corps to solve, right? We need to grassroots this problem set. And if you're part of the occupational field, you need to ante up and help out. Or you can just be in your echo chamber and start complaining all day, and you'll find a quick way out of the Marine Corps if that is your mental model, right? So I guess that's the knife hand part. Get involved in your own MOS and provide meaningful, rational data to help people with their thought process.
Thanks, Rich and Kyle, for both of those thoughts. And dear listeners, thanks for joining us. You can connect with us on social media by going to Twitter and following at @USMC_TFPHOENIX. That's @USMC_TaskForcePhoenix. Our editor is Sarah Clarkson, and marketing support is provided by Jake Osborne. You can support the cast by going to Apple Podcasts and leaving a 5-star review and accompanying comment. And with that, we are out.